Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
Most dentists, when they think the word value, they think dollar only. They think price. We've been misled to believe that dentistry, more specifically the dental business, has to be complicated. Dentistry can be simple, and dentistry should be simple. All right, everybody, welcome to our interview this week. And we're going to love our interview this week. We are with Sasha Der Avanesyan. Did I say that right?
You said that right.
Not bad. He is the CEO and founder of Harvest Dental. And here's what I'll say about Harvest Dental. For those of you in the CAD/CAM world, I promise you, you have used or placed Harvest Dental products on your patients. You may not have heard their brand because they make phenomenal products that are mainly in the lab business, but they make phenomenal products. And he was voted one of the most influential people in dental technology. And as a technology person myself, I do want to say that's mainly in the lab side of dental tech. The original dental technology was the lab business. Sasha, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming in. Well, by the way, we're live in our studio. What do you think of my studio?
I want it.
Yeah, it's easy, man. It's a few thousand bucks, you can have it. A few thousand bucks to build it. The camera, the technology is a different story, but yeah. No, it's awesome. So before we get in, we're going to talk today about brand building, customer experience, and how that ultimately leads to patient loyalty, which is a share. Ultimately, I like your words on this, which is the share of the patient's wallet, ultimately, right? Mm-hmm. And getting them to refer and all of those things. But before we get into those things that apply to the dentist and the dental practice, give us a brief story on Harvest Dental. Where did Harvest Dental come from? What is it about? All of those. Just give us a high-level overview of that.
Sure. Well, I mean, my father was a dental lab owner. Okay. I was born in 70. I was born in 74. He started in 73, so essentially I was born in the dental lab. It was my favorite place to be growing up. When my friends went to the park, I wanted to go to the lab with Dad. And so I was fully immersed. And, you know, as a kid, my dad told us that he was a smile maker. Mm-hmm. And so that to me was important. And so I would tell my friends that my dad was a smile maker. And so I was kind of immersed in that truth. And at 14 years old, you know, I was addicted to two things. And I collected them, baseball cards and dental trade journals.
Yeah, so, I love baseball cards at that age too.
Yeah, yeah. and so I would, you know, I would steal them home, you know, these big tabloids, I'd take them home and my room was just full of them. And I would just flip through them. I didn't know, you know, really what I was looking at, but I developed a relationship with the brands of the day. And so my dream was to always, you know, kind of live in this community. And, I knew that it was going to be on the product side. You know, growing up, you know, my dad sold the lab in 1990, but I had a lot of empathy for the dental lab and lab owners. And
dude, that was the heyday of labs.
It was. I mean, yeah. My dad had a 30-man lab, a really beautiful kind of, you know, beautiful design.
Here in the U.S.?
Yeah, in Glendale. It was called Premier Dental Ceramics. You know, custom benches. I mean, a very high-end, you know, it was beautiful, right? And so for me, the reference was always, I wanted to be the Mont Blanc of Dental Lab products. And the reason is because I wanted every product that I made to have a reason for being. And when you think about a Mont Blanc pen, you know, versus a Paper Mate, both of them will write the same name, but there is something about that pen. And what is it? It's the story around it, the power of the story.
It's the brand.
The brand, the power of meaning, the power of impression. And so, you know, we try to bake that into everything that we do, and that's what makes it fun for me. And so I started Harvest Dental Products in a two-car garage in 2004. I was single at the time, and when I had outgrown the garage in year one, I moved into a small little office warehouse. I had met my who was going to be my wife at the time and is my wife now, and I literally lived in the warehouse, took my showers at 24 Hour Fitness, and that's kind of where it started. Now we're in 70 countries around the world.
That's amazing. You know, as you're talking there, I'm thinking to myself, like, our stories are very, very similar. I don't know if I've ever told you this or how many of our listeners know. I grew up watching my dad make dentures. Mm. We didn't have custom benches. We had folding chairs because it was in our garage. And I remember there would be times where we couldn't use the sink because my dad was doing boil out in our kitchen sink. And then I read trade journals as well, but they were laundromat trade journals because we owned a laundromat as well.
Okay.
I used to pay for all my school activities in rolls of quarters. I don't want to get on a tangent, but it's the immigrant story. Mm. Okay. We want to be around our parents. Mm. You know, we pick up indirectly so much from them. But also goes to show that investing in yourself, which is what trade journals are, reading is. That's what, you know, even if you just look through the pictures, it just keeps solidifying things. If you don't read it, right? Mm. Even if you just kind of go through that motion of doing it, it builds you. You know, it builds character. It keeps you engaged. It keeps you all of those things. Yeah, that's amazing, and I'm so glad for your success with Harvest Dental. It's you guys make phenomenal products. You know, all your stuff is unbelievably good, and I remember I was first introduced to Harvest Dental in terms of the products when you guys had this marketing campaign with all your individual ceramists, mm. and they had like half their face was like grayed mm-hmm. out, but it was like this fancy, I call mm-hmm. it super fancy, like photoing stuff, and they all had their individual product, right? Mm. And they had the brushes and all that stuff. And it was so nice. It's such nice stuff. So I'm glad to see your success. I didn't know there were 70 countries, to be honest with you. Yeah. I just thought everything was India or the United States. That's all I thought it was. So, in our pre-show, we talked about, we want to bring value to the dentist, right? Sure. I know you're in the lab business, you know, generally speaking, you're in the lab business. Obviously, some of your business is with dentists as well. And ultimately, if you're in the lab business, your ultimate customer is the dentist, and our ultimate customer is the patient. So we all serve the patients at the end of the day. But we want to talk about brand building.
Sure.
Talk to me about your thoughts. What do dentists, I have lots of thoughts on this, but how does brand building How does that go to dentists? I mean, what do dentists need to know about brand building?
Yeah. Well, I think we'll take it one step further and say, you know, what does the human being need to know mm-hmm. about brand building? And it starts with, you know, self-awareness. It starts with understanding why I'm attracted to certain people and to things, right? The power of impressioning is, you know, the most, it's the superpower of the universe, right? And, you know, I'll actually use you in a, mm-hmm. as an example. You know, I met you about a year ago,
right?
About a year ago, but I feel like I've known you for 10 years.
Right.
And, part of that is because there has been an impressioning, right? And the most valuable part of that for me, right? The value that was impressed on me was your thought leadership. Understanding how you think, understanding why you do what you do. And you know, it would come in waves, right? It's something where, you know, I'm exposed to you at a trade show. I'm exposed to you. I'm in the seat, you're on the lecture stage. I'm in a conversation with five of my friends and they talk about T-bone and how they learned this technique. And so, you know, through all of these kind of repetitive impressions, right, micro impressions, I begin to form a macro understanding of who you are before I meet you. And then 3D dentists, right? And then, you know, the social media, you know, encounters, right? And then what happens there? Then next thing you know, I friend request you on LinkedIn.
Right.
You respond and accept. I then send a message to say, hey, thank you so much for responding. We then have lunch. I then see 3D dentists. Yeah. I see the campus. And now it comes full circle. And now I've been branded. Why? Because everything that I heard about you has now been authenticated. Everything that I thought 3D dentist in the campus was, actually my expectations were exceeded. And so I walk away and I choose to take that memory with me because I want to refer to it at a later time.
All right, so I'm going to play devil's advocate. By the way, thank you so much. I mean, I'll send you a check for all those nice things you said about me.
Let's just call that a case study.
Okay, so, all right, so number one, I agree with you. Not about me part, but the brand part, okay? I agree with you. But the average dentist is going to look at this and say, dude, I'm just trying to make a little bit of money and make a life. Like, where's the monetization from that? Like, where is building my practice? Where is the money? Where is, like, brand is a long game, right? It's generally speaking, brand is, there's some ways to make it a short game, but brand is a long game. So where do companies, dentists, labs, I mean, it's the same for labs at the end of the day, right? How do we get dentists and labs even to understand that developing your brand is ultimately, in my opinion, it's everything to building your business?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
And I use that all the time, brand over everything. At the end of the day, it's about value creation, right? It's about creating value. And value creating is a strategic decision, right? And branding right? Branding somebody, impressioning on someone is about making a choice about who you're creating the value for, right? How will they recognize that value? And what ultimately will they be willing to trade for that value?
Right.
Right. The reason why, you know, people change, the reason why somebody would go to one dentist for something and go to another for mm-hmm. something else is because they believe that value is being created for them.
Right.
Right. And
now, you know, sorry yep. to interrupt.
That's okay.
What most dentists, when they think the word value, they think dollar only. They think price, right? And one of the things that I had to learn early in my career, especially as an immigrant of Indian descent, where everything's about negotiation and everything's about the price, that was very hard for me to overcome as I was building a service-oriented business, mm-hmm. was that when somebody says value, they're generally speaking not referring to price. They're referring to an emotional connection
correct.
That they have. Like, you know, and it's, you know, again, it's very easy to say, I'll use this example because I think it's a little bit more appropriate. Lexus is a Toyota, mm-hmm. but Lexus to me has more value than a Toyota because not because of their price. In fact, it's the opposite,
right?
If they built that, it's the luxury version. So if you value luxury, if you want luxury,
right.
then you would choose a Lexus over a Toyota, even though they're essentially 90% the same car. I just wanted to interrupt you on that part of it.
Yeah, no, and you're completely right. And it is all about emotion, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, value creation, you know, it needs emotion because its purpose is to inspire emotion, right? And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that's only achieved when you become more valuable than what you do,
yeah.
right? You know, James Carse wrote a book called Finite and Infinite Games. Simon Sinek wrote a book based on that concept called The Infinite Game. But the premise basically is this, is that, you know, in life, there's really only two games that we play, finite games and infinite games. And a finite game has a beginning and an end. It has a winner and a loser, right? Football is a finite game. It's got fixed rules, right? But the infinite game has no winner and no finish line. Like knowledge, right? It has no rules and no end. And essentially, you know, the premise of the book is that, you know, they, you know, Simon Sinek uses the example of the Vietnam War, actually. And his example is around how the United States won almost every battle in that war. But, you know, why didn't they win the war? They, you know, he explains that actually Vietnam played to stay in the game and the United States played the game to win.
Right.
And so in business, you know, when we look around us, we see actually that there are infinite games, right? Business is an infinite game.
Yeah.
It's not a finite game.
It should be an infinite
game. What happens is that when you have a finite player playing in an infinite game,
yeah.
right? You ultimately, you find yourself in a position of vulnerability because, you know, when you look at our relationships, right? When you look at a friendship, you can't win a friendship.
No, you can't.
Right? You know, you can grow the depth.
Well, some of my trips to the stripper club have said, I haven't been in at least 2 days or 3 days. No, it's been at least 5 years since I've been. Keep going. I apologize.
So you know,
they act like friends when I'm there.
You cannot win a friendship. But you can grow the depth of a friendship over time, but you can't win one. Same with marriage, right? You can't win a marriage. You can't
become first in a marriage. Oh, dude, no guy can win a marriage for sure. No husband wins a marriage.
You can grow the depth of intimacy with your spouse, right? By being generous, by being empathetic, by being understanding. But you know, you can't become first in a marriage. And the same can be said for every human relationship that we have, including our customers. And so there's a paradigm shift, right? I think what happens is that, you know, we are told that business is war. We're told that business is about winning and losing. And because of that, we strategize in absolutes. And when we do that, we ultimately fall to, you know, we fall into a trap.
Yeah.
And you cannot build a brand that way.
No, you can't. You know, I have some thoughts I wrote down on this. I want to get your opinion on this because I have never heard of finite infinite. That tells you how little reading I'm doing, how little good reading I'm doing these days. But finite and infinite. And what I was going to say to you or to the dentist in general about brand building, I look at dentists struggling with brand building or valuing brand building because let me back up for a second. I would say I didn't value brand until I was past what I call the survival phase. In other words, when you start a business and it's your livelihood, people talk about brand when they've made enough money to where brand matters, you know, and they've got to get over that hump, let's say,
right.
Okay? And then when you talk about are you following me on that,
sure.
On that concept there?
Sure.
Is like, it's, I didn't value brand until I knew the bills were good. Like, unless I screwed something up badly,
sure.
The bills were going to get paid, right? Maybe not to the level that you see here, but you know, at that early stage of life. Right,
right.
That I knew that the bills were going to get paid. I didn't worry about making my car payment, my house, my basic house payment, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Right. Then brand mattered. Okay. And so what I wrote down from your comments about finite and infinite is, I believe that dentists are playing. They play a finite game. We should all play a finite game, and that game is survival. Okay. But then we should be in the infinite game, which I believe is happiness. And I think what happens to most dentists is in labs, even let's say, is they never get out of the finite game. Everything's about survival. They never say, okay, I need to make five. Like, I had a number. I needed to make $7,000 a month to pay my bills.
Mm.
Okay, so I knew that I worked. The way I lived was I worked hard. And did anything, like I had no brand,
mm.
until I made $7,000 a month,
mm.
and then I had a brand,
mm.
and then everything I did from there was about the infinite game.
Mm.
So then I was selective. Then I was only doing the dentistry I wanted to do. Then I was working the hours I wanted to work. And I think what happens to a lot of dentists is they never leave this finite mindset.
Right.
Like that mindset gets dumped into them. Like it's survival because we get so consumed with survival because it's so expensive to be open today, between student loans, between practice loans or startup loans, between life costing so much nowadays,
sure.
that we never, this mindset of survival. And then what happens is we keep buying,
mm.
we keep consuming, and then the survival number just keeps going up and up and up.
Mm.
And then we just never get out of this mindset. And, That's at least how I look at it, right? It's either you have a lot of money and you can play the slow game to win,
right?
Okay, well, you know, just, you can't say win, but
sure.
You can play the slow game, right? Or you have to have the slow thing in mind, but you got to play the short game until you hit survival mode, until you get past that hump, and then everything has to be about the long game. So where I'm at in my dental career today only is there because of my brand. And my brand, I don't mean the brand that dentists know me as, but the brand that patients know me as. And that only came about because I was disciplined in focusing on the short term, the survival, and knowing that there was a bigger picture out there. And I would differentiate my practice that way. So some months, all I did was survive.
Sure.
And there was no like long-term planning. And there's some months where, hey, I did a cosmetic case today. I'm done for the month. Now, literally everything from now on is just this. Mm. You know, and so that's how I compartmentalized the game of brand building. So does that kind of make sense?
Absolutely. And so my story is very similar. I mean, you know, I was still in my little office warehouse. I was living in the warehouse, and this was like 2005. And, you know, I had hit a plateau, and I was probably taking home, you know, I was engaged to be married. I was getting married in 6 months, and I was probably taking home close to, you know, $5,000 a month.
Right.
You know, I knew that I, you know, needed a little more than that, and I was stuck. And it was about 5 a.m. I was sitting at my desk, and it was probably, you know, and any entrepreneur can probably attest to this. You know, you go through maybe 2 or 3 very, very dark moments that you never forget. It's where you literally find yourself in a room with no windows, and you begin to doubt yourself to your core. And I had fallen into this kind of state of mind where I actually believed that I couldn't do it. And I started to doubt myself, and I was thinking, wow, Sasha, what did you do? You know, you're getting married in 6 months, and you know, you just don't know where to go from here. And so I had kind of realized that, you know, I wanted to take home an additional $2,000 or $3,000. And it was going to, you know, when I did my calculation based on my average product price, it was going to come back to about, you know, I needed like 300 new customers. Mm-hmm. And my heart sank. And so, I fell into slipped into a little despair. And, mm-hmm. So I prayed, and as I was praying, cause I had nowhere to look but up, I just grabbed this piece of paper out of my printer, and I wrote this question: if Harvest Dental was gone today, what would the market miss about me tomorrow? And that right there in that moment is when I made a choice that I was going to build a brand. And by building a brand, the strategy would shift. And that strategy would now become, you know, would I be missed if I was gone? And I had to execute that at the human level. And so where somebody that maybe could be stuck in this finite mindset, the way that I broke out of it is that I decided that I was going to stop chasing the customers that I did not yet have. Mm. And I was going to focus on the customers and honor the customers that have already trusted me. And I was going to create value that would be worthy to be shared. And by that I mean doing things that I would categorize as surprise and delight. Surprising the customer with a value proposition that they don't expect.
Can you give us an example of something like that?
Sure. So let's say I would get an order from a laboratory. And what I would do is I would wait until the customer was invoiced, right? Mm-hmm. And I would tell my front desk, you know, give me this invoice at like, you know, after it's sent, put it on my desk as a reminder. They would send me the invoice. And then what I would do is I would then call the laboratory or the dealer. And I would say, hey, I just wanted to thinking about you. And just wanted to say thank you for, you know, just for your partnership and for trusting us. And I'm going to put this one on the house. The invoice has already been sent. Mm-hmm. So when you get it, just, you know, I'm going to basically process a credit note. But when you get it, just know that there's a credit note coming on the back of that. What was I doing? I was creating value that was recognized. And in order to create value that's recognized, you have to tick some boxes, right? It has to be intentional. It has to cost you something. It has to be something that you didn't have to do. And so by allowing the invoice to go, the easy thing for me, the probable thing for me, the expectation would be, why would I call and pull that back if it's already been sent?
Right.
I'm literally taking money out of my pocket. And so the branding happens not when you're talking to him, but it's when you hang up the phone. It's when he's walking back to what he was doing after that call. It's as the seed kind of finds its way into the fertile soil, right? It becomes an emotional transaction. And I've just gained $300,000 in brand equity for, let's say, an order that was $250. It's finding conventional, habitual opportunities to overturn. The conventional opportunity there was he had purchased 10 products. He had received 10 products and I had invoiced him for 10 products. I stopped what I was doing to call him, to tell him how grateful I was.
You called directly.
Correct.
The owner of the company.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. And so what I'm doing is it's an outreach, right? And at the end of the day, you know, positioning is really true positioning. True branding is rooted in empathy.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into full arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3d-dentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
Yeah. Right?
It's so an example I just thought of, okay? So like what I try to do is take what you talked about. Because I don't know how many of you listening are like me. Like I'll hear examples from somebody else in another industry, and I initially say, "Well, that doesn't work in dentistry. Like dentistry, so as if our business is so different from other businesses, right? And it's not. So I just came up with a version of that is dentists. Okay, so tell me if this would be equivalent. Sasha, you come to my office. I do a crown on you. Okay, I do nice work, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah, I take MetLife, I do substandard work on you, maybe. I don't know. So I give you work, I do nice work, I'm proud of it, you say thank you, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. You pay your portion, MetLife being the jerks they are, substitute any insurance company mm-hmm. in there. You know, they don't pay $30, $40 of it. I would let my team send you a statement. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, put the statement on my desk. Mm-hmm. And then I personally would pick up the phone and say, Sasha, I wanted you to know that you're going to be receiving a statement from the office for that crown I did. I want you to know that I value you as a patient for the last 10 years. And I know MetLife didn't honor their portion of it. I just want you to know I'm going to put a credit on the account so that you can ignore that invoice, that statement when you get it. Mm-hmm. Would that be basically something similar to what you're talking about?
Sure. I mean, it could be anything. It doesn't even have to be money,
yeah.
right? It could be a box of chocolates. It could yeah. be, I mean, you know, the reality is that, you know, it's first understanding what is the expectation of the patient.
They have very little.
Well, I don't
we
know.
Hope.
Because if I come to your office, right, and I'm getting work done, I'm expecting that you're going to give me good work. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting a good
price. That's standard.
Correct. Right. So the goal then in branding, right, in transitioning from a finite mindset into an infinite mindset, is how do you exceed their expectation, the conventional transaction of a patient and a dentist.
That's value, by the way.
That's value.
That's value. Value isn't the dollar amount. The value is what you just said there. How do you exceed the conventional expectation?
Correct.
And I'll argue it's easier than ever to exceed the conventional expectation in the sense of service, because absolutely, service doesn't exist anymore.
Correct.
Right? The human-to-human contact or connection has essentially almost disappeared.
It has. And that is the opportunity of a lifetime, right? And whenever, you know, whenever industries commoditize, right, they do one thing. They drive a lower perception of value. You see, if I'm getting what I pay for, there is no value. Right? Right. Where there's expectation, there's no value. Because value is a feeling. So in order to create value, essentially what you're doing is you're engineering, you're reverse engineering a feeling. What is it that you want your customer to feel? Hey team, these are the human attributes that we want to deploy when a patient comes into our practice. And you have to create and design a product that essentially is inspiration, that is rooted in a behavior that needs packaging and needs distribution, right? And so, look, and the cool thing about value creation is there's no rules. You could have a full coffee bar in your practice. When somebody walks in, it's like, it's a disruption. You're overturning a convention, their conventional expectation of what a dental office looks like.
So if I had a whole box of Snickers, that probably goes against conventional expectations. What if I just had sugar packets for patients?
You're probably gonna have to do a little better than that, right? But you know, but you get that, you get what I'm saying here. I mean, they're like, ultimately, listen, value creation needs an obsession around status quo thinking. You have to be obsessed with understanding the box you can think outside of it. And so what we do, what I do, what I train my team to do is to define conventional behavior. What does everybody do when somebody answers the phone? Do we all sound the same? Right? What if somebody calls me and we basically handle whatever it is we need to handle on the phone with the customer has a need, right? Nobody wants to get up and call someone to order a product. Nobody wants to do that. So that's the first thing we have to understand is, hey, you know what? How do we win? How do we win, not in the sense of winning business, but how do we accomplish our mission and deliver on our promise? And you do that by viewing attention as the most valuable asset that they own, because they're giving you their attention. Anytime somebody walks into your office, anytime somebody calls me or walks into my door, my purpose is to deliver a return on that attention that is more valuable than what they expect.
Yeah, that's you know, I don't.
Does that make sense?
100%, it makes sense. And I've generalized thinking of value as a dollar. Mm-hmm. And really, it's I love where you said that, or for me, the realization was that value is anything that's beyond the conventional expectation. Mm-hmm. And that could be coffee.
That means something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's to that person.
Correct.
Like my, when you said a coffee bar, like as someone that doesn't drink coffee, I'd be like, why the hell am I paying for this? Like, I'm thinking I'm paying for that coffee that I'm never going to enjoy, right? But if you had a charging outlet for my phone, I'd be like, well, I value that. I'd pay for that, right? It's so yeah. So I think that's part of the real challenge for us is understanding that value has to be personalized. Mm. Okay, value has to be personalized. Like for example, you value wanting to eat Indian food. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we want to eat Indian food, right? You got to understand what somebody's after.
Right.
Like me taking you to a great Armenian restaurant probably isn't going to be that great for you, right? Mm. Because you're like, it's not mom's food, right? And so to me, we got to understand. I'm just using those as loose examples. We got to understand. I wrote this down because this was something that I learned a few years back that was really insightful for me. People are your number one product. At the end of the day, you don't really sell something that people can't get a customer can't get anywhere else. Like you don't have, I'm speaking from not knowing, you're completely knowing your business. You don't have any unique widget that's uniquely, you don't have a Moderna vaccine.
Right.
But even that I can get somewhere else. Right? You don't have something that literally no one else makes.
Sure.
Okay. So when you play in that world, okay, which most of us, 90% of the world is that world, okay, people are really your number one product. At the end of the day, what makes your business different than Ivoclar, let's say? I know you guys have some kind of relationship there, but I'm just going to, they're the first company that came to my mind, okay?
Sure.
You sell this, Ivoclar sells that.
Right.
To me, ultimately, what makes the difference is, and we can, they'll argue their product's better. You'll argue your product's better.
Sure.
I'll argue they're all the same. Okay. Right. But the only reason you buy something from somebody is the people, right? Who your connection is to that product, whether that's somebody on the phone, whether that's the user interface and the ease of the website, whether that's the branding and marketing of the product. You know, it's a person. There's a person behind that, right? Sure. And so I believe that in the dental practices, the only differentiator we have are people. Because at the end of the day, we're living, as you said, a commoditized world. That how many of your customers service dentists that have CAD/CAM machines?
It's a growing number, of course. Yeah. But yeah.
So let's say there's 8 dentists on my corner.
Sure.
Literally 8 dentists on my corner. 6 of them have CAD/CAM. Mm-hmm. 6 of them have cone beam. Mm-hmm. 6 of them do good dentistry. Mm-hmm. 6 of them take insurance. Mm-hmm. 6 of them have new equipment. 6 of them have all the things I have. So really, what is different in my practice and their practice? Mm. It's the people.
Sure.
Right? And part of that is part of your branding, by the way. Your people are part of your brand.
100%.
You know, whether it's something I take, you know, most dentists probably don't care about this, but I judge people's brands on who they associate themselves with.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Because a brand is association.
Yeah, from key opinion leaders or mm-hmm. who writes articles for them or who mm-hmm. they're putting in their ads, who they have speaking on this stage. Mm-hmm. I judge brands by that because I think it's a reflection of their culture.
Sure.
And maybe that's old school Indian in me, right? I judge brands on who's at their front desk.
Right.
Is it a nice person? Are they not nice? You know, all of these things.
So it's funny you say that. I mean, so one of the things that I tell lab owners all the time is, you know, your most, you know, the pickup and delivery mm-hmm. behavior of a dental lab. If I owned a dental lab, he would probably be my most expensive employee.
Yeah.
Because he's actually has the unique opportunity
to impress. He's customer facing.
Right? On the dentist.
He can't walk in missing a tooth.
Right? But right, so there's, you know, there's it is a paradigm shift, right? When you think about it. No, the interesting thing is that yes, you're right. The thumbprint, right? We actually were never designed to even have a competitor, right? And when you think about it that way, it almost is very liberating in kind of being able to kind of visioneer towards innovative value creation. And when I say innovative value creation, I'm referring to behavioral innovation. Right? Because yes, every person takes an order, but not every person is personalizing the order or personalizing the experience, right? And there's a very interesting statistic from McKinsey that says that 75% of the customers that we lose would actually deem themselves satisfied with our product, our price point, and our service. And so if that's the case, right, we have to ask the question, why do they leave?
Oh.
They're with us because we're good enough. They're with us because they don't have a reason to leave. But they leave us because we don't give them a reason to stay. And again, that reason has to be more valuable than what you do.
It's not price.
It's not price. It has nothing to do with price.
Yeah.
And
Apple proves that, by the way.
Well, and
and Starbucks.
And so the way that you prove that, right, is when you become as unique as your thumbprint, you then become what the customer actually really wants. And what everybody wants is they want to experience something that is rare. The things that are valuable to us are only valuable to us because they are scarce. And so when you engage in a relationship that is scarce, i.e. the people you choose to hang out with, right?
Mm-hmm.
You are impacted by those people because they are rare, right? You, when you go to DS World, you talk to, I don't know, probably 3,000 people, but maybe only a handful of them leave an impression, right?
Right.
The reality is that, you know, our strategy as brand builders is very simple when you think about it. It's to be scarce. It's to create value that is rare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Last thing. We had this conversation a little earlier. I wrote down what is important to you becomes important to them. And I think, generally speaking, big companies, big dental practices, big manufacturers, they lead dentists to stop caring about things because it's not important to them. Mm. And they and most companies will say, customers don't value service, so we stop providing it. And I think it's the opposite. I think whatever becomes important to you becomes important to them. Mm-hmm. And when a company goes about, so I'm trying to put my thought together here. Sure. I'm struggling a little bit, but back to the value proposition. Okay, sometimes you have to help people understand the value you create by telling them, mm-hmm. as simple as telling them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I learned, and especially in my situation, is that if I do something at no charge for you and never give you a receipt of what the value would have been or could have been or should have been,
mm-hmm.
there's no value to it.
Sure.
Okay. So like in my situation where I do quite a bit of charity dentistry, some chosen, a lot of it unchosen or expected, one of the things I've started doing very well is giving people that invoice and saying, just so you know, I don't say this,
right?
But it's implied that, hey, I did, like, I went in yesterday and did like 8 restorations on a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably thought, oh, it's just 2 hours of his time. It's no big deal. Right. But I mean, that was probably $3,000 worth of dentistry, right? Right. And so I make sure that he gets a statement. Mm-hmm. With that $3,000 and then mm-hmm. your friend courtesy or something. Correct. On there, so that they know they have the value. So it's like Coors Light. You know, nobody knows the cold, whatever Coors does. I mean, Mountain Brewing, cold brewing, mm-hmm. every beer is brewed that way, but Coors Light tells you enough times that their beer is unique because they do this, mm-hmm. that you start believing it. You believe, right. There's a value in that, right? Like Mick Ultra is known as the low carb or low calorie beer, mm-hmm. because they tell you.
Right.
You know, so sometimes you got to build the value by telling people, not in this arrogant way, mm-hmm. but just letting, sure. them know, you know, and that's Mont Blanc. They write their story, to, right. use your example. Like, to me, a pen is a pen.
Right.
Right. To you, a pen is not a pen. Okay.
It is a pen too.
But you know the Mont Blanc story. Right. I don't.
Right.
Right. So that story that they told,
mm-hmm.
you know, connects with you.
Right.
and then you value something beyond that, right?
Correct.
Around that.
Correct.
And the other thing that came to my mind while you were talking, I'm just a big believer in being upfront with people. Mm. Okay. Mm. I guess that's part of my DNA and brand, is that I'm an honest, you know, I'm a forthright person.
Right.
And I learned this from Elon Musk, or watching Elon. I loved it when in 2012 or 13, I bought a Tesla. Mm-hmm. And that's early in the game for a Tesla. And Elon was, he didn't talk to me. He was saying this in an interview. Sure. He said, I'm upfront to tell people that bought a Tesla that you're paying too much for this Tesla. But I need you to buy it so that we can fund our business to make the inexpensive Tesla.
Interesting. Wow.
And so to me, it gave me a sense of cause. Hmm. You know, number one, how do you justify a $120,000 car for a car that's the size of a Honda Civic,
right?
That has no luxury inside of it. It's super Spartan. I know there's some people believe that that is luxury. Hmm. But, you know, to me, I said, well, you know, I'm paving the way forward so that he can create the Model 3. Mm. You know, and he was upfront with people about that. And I think part of that is brand building, letting people know what you stand for. Mm. You know, like, I know Harvest Dental stands for this because I read enough where you say, we want to stand for unique products in the market that deliver high value, mm-hmm. right? You don't say we're trying to be Walmart.
Right.
Hey, you don't say, I don't want to use dental company names, but you don't say I'm trying to be generic XYZ.
Correct.
Right. We're trying to serve a unique segment of the population.
Right.
Or a unique segment of the customer base.
Right.
And to me, that's all branding. Mm. And it's interesting. I don't think dentists or the dental profession values brand enough. Mm. We're a relationship-based business. Mm-hmm. And brand, to me, is nothing more than a relationship. And we're living in a world where that relationship is not a handshake anymore, always. It's your social media presence. It's
huge.
It's how you conduct yourself when other people aren't watching. Right? Mm. It's easy to be something when people are watching you, but who are you when people aren't watching? That's part of your brand. Mm. You know, those are all the things that I look at as branding. It's putting that content out there. Like, I don't want to be known as an office that dances.
Right.
Like, doing all I find that silly, right? So I try not to do that stuff for the most part. We have to do a little bit of it, but because I'm not trying to attract people like that to my practice, right? And so
you know who your customer is.
Well, that we lose touch of that sometimes, but that's a different story.
Right.
But yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, I think that, you know, the only really what the customer really wants is the answer to three questions. Do you see me? Are you for me? And can I trust you?
Can you repeat those again?
Do you see me? Right? Like, do you notice me? Are you for me? And can I trust you? If you can answer those three questions, you'll win a place in their mind and heart.
Do you see me?
Are you for me?
Are you for me?
And can I trust you?
Can I trust you?
And so, again, when you think about all the things we touched on, right, I think each of them lend to, right, kind of one of those questions. And, you know, when I call the distributor and tell him that actually, hey, you ordered 10, but I'm going to give you an additional 2 after the invoice has gone out.
Yeah.
Maybe in your instance where, you know, you want to give something away to a patient, bill them.
Right.
Let them take the bill home. Call them later and say, hey, you know what? I just want to thank you for coming in. I'm going to take that cost out.
Because you take away free, it has no value.
It has no value. And so you almost have to create the catalyst so that generosity can be defined. Because at the end of the day, generosity is one of the most attractive human attributes known to man. And in order to be recognized as generous, there needs to be a backdrop that you are almost rebelling against, right? You're rebelling against the convention that I've billed you for this and you're going to pay me for it. You're literally, it's costing you not just time and money to take it back, but the more powerful action, intention.
Yeah, it's a great conversation, Sasha. I mean, do you have any other thoughts? Anything you want to go over? Or yeah, I think we just gave people tremendous amounts of stuff to think about. There's some actionable items there. I love the, do you see me? Are you for me? And can I trust you?
Yeah, I think just the last thing I'll say is, you know, at the end of the day, your greatest value that you can provide to a customer that you do not yet have is the transference of trust from the customer that you do.
Yeah.
And we call that word of mouth.
Or the referral.
Right?
Yeah.
And so if you can create value that is worthy to be shared, if you can use that as kind of the rule, hey guys, how can we create value for our patients that could be worthy to be shared to somebody that they love? We're doing a good job.
You know, in the lab business, I see that daily. I see work on the social media that people are putting out there that's worthy to be shared. You know, and I mean, and that's what we want our patients to do too, right?
Right.
We want our patients to go out and share their new smile with everybody.
Absolutely.
And my argument to it in a step forward on what you're saying is start building that expectation that it's normal to share.
Right.
By telling people, I'd love it if you, it's to me, it's simple.
Sure.
You know, it's telling somebody, hey, Sasha, I know you're going to love you. I thank you for telling me you love your smile. Nothing would mean more to me than if you would share your smile on social media.
Sure.
You know?
And even further, you know, an experience, a human experience. Yeah. Hey, you know, I was at my dentist and like they did this.
Yeah.
Right? That is really a transference of trust, because what you're doing is you're literally, you know, it must have moved somebody. The behavioral innovation, right? That to me is incredibly powerful.
It is the most powerful thing. If somebody comes in ready.
Ready.
Yeah.
Ready.
You know, it's your job just not to screw it up, essentially,
right,
at that point.
That's right.
Just don't F it up, right?
That's right.
Sasha, thank you so much for stopping in the studio and talking to us. I look forward to going to have some nice Indian food together.
Likewise. It was a pleasure.
Let's see. We'll see what happens with it. Okay. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next week. And everybody have a great day.